looked at the evil teacher, purple eyes bulging like marbles, then at Professor Seder, smiling at her curiously, then at Sophie, across the clearing, miming wart gluing, mouth zipping. "Yes."
"You lie to a teacher?"
Lady Leso lashed.
"It's not a lie,"
a voice shouted. Everyone turned to Sophie.
"We were both there. We were in his tower."
"And I bet you saw the Storian, too,"
Beatrix sneered.
"Matter of fact, we did,"
Sophie retorted to laughter.
"And did it start your fairy tale, too?"
"It did. It did start our fairy tale."
"All hail the Queen of Fools,"
Beatrix proclaimed to roars. "Then you must be the Grand Empress." Beatrix turned to Agatha, arms akimbo.
"Ugh, the mistake,"
Beatrix groaned. "Good has never been so wrong."
"You wouldn't know good if it crawled up your dress," Agatha yelled.
Beatrix gasped so loudly, Tedros cracked a grin.
"Don't talk to Beatrix that way," a voice said.
Agatha turned to find blonde-haired Tristan.
"Beatrix,"
Agatha exploded.
"You sure you don't want Tedros? He'd love to marry himself."
Tedros stopped smiling. Dumbstruck, he glanced between Agatha, Tristan, Beatrix. He lost patience and punched Tristan in the mouth. Tristan drew his dulled training sword, Tedros whipped out his, and they clashed in public duel. But Tristan had been studying Tedros in swordplay, so they both used the exact same ripostes, the same retreats, even the same fight calls, until no one knew who was who. Rather than intervene, swordplay Professor Espada twirled his long mustache.
"We'll dissect this thoroughly in class tomorrow."
The Nevers had a more immediate response.
"Fight!" Ruthven roared.
Nevers rushed Evers, steamrolled stunned wolves, and dive-bombed into the dueling swordsmen. Whooping Everboys charged in, inciting an epic playground brawl that splattered Evergirls with mud. Agatha couldn't help but laugh at girls brought to their knees by dirt, until filthy Beatrix pointed at her.
"She started it!"
Screaming Evergirls charged after Agatha, who climbed a tree. Nearby, Tedros managed to reach his head from under Boys and saw Sophie spring past.
"Help!"
he yelled. Sophie stepped on his head as she ran to help Agatha, who was being pelted with pebbles by Beatrix. Then she caught Hort out of the corner of her eye.
"You! Give me back my wart!"
Hort scooted around the brawling mass, Sophie in pursuit, until she got close enough to pick up a fallen branch and hurl it at his head. Hort ducked, and it hit Lady Leso in the face. Students froze. Lady Leso touched her cold, gashed cheek. Staring at the blood on her hand, she grew eerily calm. Her long red nail rose and pointed at Agatha.
"Lock her in her tower."
A swarm of fairies seized Agatha and dragged her past smirking Tedros towards the Evers tunnel.
"No, it's my fault,"
Sophie cried.
"And this one,"
Lady Leso stabbed her blood-stained finger at Sophie.
"To the doom room."
Before Sophie could scream, a claw covered her mouth and pulled her past petrified classmates into the darkness of trees. Sophie couldn't live through torture. Sophie couldn't survive true evil. As fairies flew her upstairs, Agatha welled panicked tears and glanced down to see teachers surging into the foyer. "Professor Seder," she cried, clinging to a banister, "you have to believe us. The Storian thinks Sophie's a villain. It's going to kill her." Seder and 20 teachers looked up, alarmed.
"How do you see our village?"
Agatha yelled as fairies wrested her away. How do we get home? What does a princess have that a villain doesn't? Seda smiled.
Questions. Always in threes.
Teachers chuckled and dispersed.
Seen the Storian?
Espada mused.
She's the one who eats candy,
Professor Anemone explained.
No! You have to save her, Agatha begged,
but the fairies dragged her to her room and locked her in. Frantic, she scaled her bed canopy past paintings of lip-locked heroes and lunged for the broken ceiling tile. But it wasn't broken anymore. Someone had sealed it, tight. Blood drained from Agatha's cheeks. Seda was her only hope, and he refused to answer questions. Now her only friend would die in that dungeon, all because a magic pen had mistaken a princess for a witch. Then something flashed in her head. Something Seda said in class. If you do have questions. Breathless, Agatha emptied her basket of school books. A grey wolf, stoic and efficient, tugged Sophie by a long chain fixed to a tight iron collar around her neck. Skirting the dank sewer walls, she couldn't fight her leash. One wrong step and she'd slip off the narrow path into roaring sludge. Across the rotted black river, she saw two wolves drag moaning Vex from the direction in which she was headed. His eyes met hers, red-rimmed, hateful. Whatever happened to him in the Doom Room had left him more a villain than when he entered. Agatha, Sophie told herself, Agatha will get us home. She bit back tears. Stay alive for Agatha. As she approached the sewer's halfway point, where sludge turned to clear lake water, she felt the wall's solid stone become rusty grating. The wolf kicked the door open and shoved her in. Sophie lifted her head to a dark dungeon, lit by a single torch. Everywhere she looked were tools of punishment. Breaking wheel, rack, stocks, nooses, hooks, garrote, Iron Maiden, thumbscrews, and a terrifying collection of spears, clubs, rods, whips, and knives. Her heart stopped. She turned away. Two red eyes glowed from the corner. Slowly, a big, black wolf rose from shadows, twice the size of all the other wolves, but this one had a human's body with a thick, hairy chest, sinewy arms, bulging calves, and massive feet. The beast cracked open a scroll of parchment and read in a deep growl.
You, Sophie of Woods Beyond, have hereby been summoned to the Doom Room for the following sins. Conspiracy to commit untruth, disruption of assembly, attempted murder of a faculty member.
Murder?
Sophie gasped.
Incitement of public riots. Crossing of boundary lines during assembly. Destruction of school property. Harassment of fellow students. And crimes against humanity.
I plead not guilty to all charges, Sophie scowled. Especially the last.
The beast seized her face in his claws.
Guilty until proven innocent.
Let go!
Sophie screamed. He sniffed her neck.
Aren't you a luscious peach?
You'll leave marks!
To her surprise, the beast released her.
It usually takes a beating to find the weak spot.
Sophie looked at the beast, confused. He licked his lips and grinned. With a cry, she lunged for the door. He slammed her to the wall and cuffed her arms to hooks above her head.
Let me go!
The beast slunk along the wall, hunting for just the right punishment. Please, whatever I did, I'm sorry, Sophie wailed.
Villains don't learn from apologies, the beast said.
Considered a cudgel for a moment, then moved on.
Villains learn from pain.
Please, someone help me!
Pain makes you stronger, said the beast.
He caressed the tip of a rusty spear, then hung it back up. Help! Sophie shrieked.
Pain makes you grow.
The beast picked out an axe. Sophie's face went ghost white. He walked up to her, axe handle in his meaty claw.
Pain makes you evil.
He took her hair in his hands.
No,
Sophie choked. The beast raised the axe.
Please!
The blade slashed through her hair. Sophie stared at her long, beautiful gold locks on the black dungeon floor. Mouth froze open in silence. Slowly, she raised her terrorized face to meet the big black beast's. Then her lips quivered, her body hung from its chains, and the tears came. She buried her shorn, jagged head in her chest and cried. She cried until her nose stuffed up and she couldn't breathe, spit caking her black tunic, wrists bleeding against her cuffs. A lock snapped. Sophie lifted her raw red eyes to see the beast unhook her from the wall.
Get out,
he growled, and hung the axe up. When he turned, Sophie was gone. The beast lumbered out of the cell and knelt at the midpoint between rolling muck and clean water. As he dipped the bloody chains in, currents smashed from both directions, rinsing them clean. Scrubbing the last spots of blood away, he caught his reflection in the sludge, only it wasn't his. The beast spun... Sophie shoved him in. The beast thrashed in water and slime, grunting and flailing for the wall. The tides were too strong. She watched him gurgle his last breaths and sink like a stone. Sophie smoothed her hair and walked towards the light, swallowing the sickness in her throat. The good forgive, said the rules. But the rules were wrong. They had to be. Because she hadn't forgiven. She hadn't forgiven at all. Chapter 14. The Crypt Keeper's Solution. The cover was silver silk, painted with the glowing Storion clutched between black and white swans. A Student's History of the Woods, August A. Sader. Agatha opened to the first page. This book reflects the views of its author only. Professor Sader's interpretation of history is his alone, and the faculty does not share it. Sincerely, Clarissa Dovey and Lady Lesso, Deans of the School for Good and Evil. Agatha felt encouraged that the faculty disapproved of the book in her hands. It gave her more hope that somewhere in these pages was the answer to the riddle. The difference between a princess and a witch. The proof good and evil were balanced. Could they be the same? She flipped the page to start, but it didn't have words. Splashed across it were patterns of embossed dots in a rainbow of colours, small as pinheads. Agatha turned the page. More dots. She tore through fistfuls of pages. No words at all. She dumped her face to the book in frustration. Sader's voice boomed.
Chapter 14. The Great War.
Agatha lurched up. Before her eyes, a ghostly, three-dimensional scene melted into view atop the book page. A living diorama, colours gauzy like Sader's paintings in the gallery. She crouched to watch a silent vision unfold of three wizened old men, beards to the floor, standing in the schoolmaster's tower with hands united. As the old men opened their hands, the gleaming Storian levitated out of them and over a familiar white stone table. Seda's disembodied voice continued. Now, remember from chapter one, the Storian was placed at the school for good and evil by the three seers of the endless woods, who believed it the only place it could be protected from corruption. Agatha gawked in disbelief. Sightless Seda couldn't write history, but he could see it, and wanted the same for his students. Every time she turned a page and touched the dots, living history came alive to his narration. Most of chapter 14 recounted what Sophie had told her at lunch, that the school had been ruled by two sorcerer brothers, one good, one evil, whose love for each other overcame their loyalties to either side. But in time, the evil brother found love give way to temptation, until he saw only one obstacle between him and the pen's infinite power, his own blood. Agatha's hand swept over dots, scanning exhaustive scenes of great war battles, alliances, betrayals to see how it all ended. Her fingers stopped as she watched a familiar figure in silver robes and mask rise out of the burning carnage of battle, Storian in hand. From the final fight between evil brother and good brother, a victor emerged, beholden to neither side. In the great truce, the triumphant schoolmaster vowed to rise above good and evil and protect the balance for as long as he could keep himself alive. Neither side trusted the victor, of course, but they didn't need to. The scene flashed to the dying brother, burning to ashes as he desperately stabbed his hand into the sky, unleashing a burst of silver light. For the dying brother used his final embers of magic to create a last spell against his twin, a way to prove good and evil still equal. As long as this proof stayed intact, then the Storian remained uncorrupted, and the woods in perfect balance. And as to what this proof is, Agatha's heart leapt. It remains in the school for good and evil, to this very day. The scene went dark. She turned the page urgently, touched the dots. Seda's voice boomed. Chapter 15. The Woods-Wide Roach Plague. Agatha flung the book against the wall. Then the others, leaving cracks in painted couples' faces. When there were no more to throw, she buried her face in the bed. Please, help us. Then, in the silence between prayers and tears, something came. Not even a thought. An impulse. Agatha lifted her head. The answer to the riddle looked back at her. It's just a haircut, Sophie told herself as she climbed through a cornflower thicket. No one will even notice. She slid between two periwinkle trees into the west clearing, approaching her group from behind. Just find Agatha and... The group all turned at once. No one laughed. Not Dot, not Tedros. Not even Beatrix. They gaped with such horror, Sophie couldn't breathe.
Excuse me, something in my eye.
She ducked behind a blue rose bush and gulped for air. She couldn't bear any more humiliation.
Least you look like a never now, Tedros said, bobbing behind the bush. So no one makes my mistake.
Sophie turned beet red.
Well, this is what happens when you're friends with a witch, the prince frowned.
Now Sophie was a pomegranate.
Look, it's not that bad. Not as bad as your friend, at least.
Excuse me, said Sophie, eggplant purple. Something in my other eye.
She darted out and grabbed Dot like a life raft. Where's Agatha? But Dot was still staring at her hair. Sophie cleared her throat.
They haven't let her out of her room, Dot said. Too bad she'll miss the flower ground. If Yuba can call the conductor, that is.
She nodded at the gnome, grumpily jabbing at a blue pumpkin patch. Dot's eyes drifted back to Sophie's hair.
It's nice. Please don't, Sophie said softly.
Dot's eyes misted.
You were so pretty.
It'll grow back, Sophie said, trying not to cry.
Don't worry, Dot sniffled. One day, someone evil enough will kill that monster.
Sophie stiffened.
All aboard, Yuba called.
She turned to see Tedros open the top of an ordinary blue pumpkin like a teapot and vanish inside. Sophie squinted.
What in the...
Something poked her hip and she looked down. Yuba thrust a flower-ground pass at her and opened the pumpkin lid, revealing a thin caterpillar in a violet velvet tuxedo and matching top hat, floating in a swirl of pastel colours.
No spitting, sneezing, singing, sniffling, swinging, swearing, slapping, sleeping or urinating in the flower ground, he said, in the crabbiest voice imaginable. Violations will result in removal of your clothes. All aboard.
Sophie whipped to Yuba. Wait, I need to find my friend. A vine shot up and yanked her in. Too stunned to scream, she plunged through dazzling pinks, blues, yellows, as more tendrils lashed and fastened around her like safety belts. Sophie heard a hiss and wheeled to see a giant green flytrap swallow her. She found her scream before vines jerked her out of its mouth and into a tunnel of hot, blinding mist, and hooked her onto something that kept her moving while her feet and arms dangled freely in the ivy harness. Then the mist cleared, and Sophie saw the most magical thing she'd ever seen. It was an underground transport system, big as a whole village, made entirely of luminescent plants. Dangling passengers hung onto vine straps attached to glowing, different-coloured tree trunks covered in matching flowers. These colour-coded trunks wove together in a colossal maze of tracks. Some trunks ran parallel, some perpendicular, some forked in different directions, but all took riders to their precise destinations in the endless woods. Sophie stared in shock at a row of unsmiling dwarves, pickaxes in belts, clinging to straps off a fluorescent red trunk labelled Rosalinda Line. Running in the opposite direction was the glittery green Arborea Line, with a family of bears in crisp suits and dresses among the riders hanging off shamrock vines. Flabbergasted, Sophie peered down her hibiscus line to see the rest of her group swinging from an electric blue trunk. But only the nevers were strapped into harnesses.
Flower grounds only for evers, Dot called out. They have to let us on 'cause we're with the school, but they still don't trust us.
Sophie didn't care. She would ride the flower ground for the rest of her life if she could. Besides its strong, soothing pace and delicious scents, there was an orchestra of lizards for each line. The tangerine line lizards strummed bouncy banjo guitars. The violet line ones played sultry sitars. And the lizards on Sophie's line piped up-tempo jingles on piccolos, accompanied by caroling blue frogs. Lest riders grow hungry, each line had its own snacks, with bluebirds fluttering along the hibiscus line offering blue corn muffins and blueberry punch. For once, Sophie had all she needed. Muscles unclenching, she forgot about boys and beasts as vines pulled her up, up, into a churning wind wheel of blue light. Her body felt wind, then air, then earth. And arms unfurling into the sky, Sophie bloomed out of the ground like a heavenly hyacinth, and found herself in a graveyard. Headstones the colour of the bleak sky swept over barren hills. Shivering classmates spouted from a hole in the ground next to her.
Where are we?
she stammered through chattering teeth. Garden of good and evil, Dot shivered, nibbling a chocolate lizard. Doesn't look like a garden to me, Sophie chattered back. Warmth thawed her skin as Yuba sparked a few small fires around the group with his magical staff. Sophie and her classmates exhaled.
In a few weeks, you will each be unlocked to perform spells, said the gnome to excited titters. But spells are no substitute for survival skills. Mealworms live near graves and can keep you alive when food is scarce. Today, you'll be finding and eating them.
Sophie clutched her stomach.
Off you go, teams of two, the gnome said. Whichever team eats the most mealworms wins the challenge.
His eyes flicked to Sophie.
Perhaps our black sheep can find redemption.
Black sheep can't find anything without her girlfriend, Tedros murmured. Sophie moped miserably as he paired up with Beatrix. Come on, Dot said, pulling Sophie to the ground. We can beat them. Suddenly motivated, Sophie started searching the ground with Dot, careful to stay close to the fire. What do mealworms look like? Like worms, said Dot. Sophie was deliberating a retort when she noticed a figure in the distance, silhouetted atop a hill. It was a massive giant with a long black beard, thick dreadlocks, and midnight blue skin. He wore only a small brown loincloth as he dug a row of graves. Does it all himself, the crypt keeper, Dot said to Sophie. That's why there's such a backlog. Sophie followed her eyes to a 2-mile line of bodies and coffins behind the crypt keeper, waiting for burial. Immediately she could see the difference between the Nevers' dark stone coffins and the Evers' coffins, made of glass and gold. But there were also some bodies without caskets, just lying untended on the hill slope beneath circling vultures. Why doesn't he have help? She said, nauseous.
Cause no one can interfere with the crypt keeper's system, Hort said softly. 2 years my dad's waited.
His voice cracked.
Killed by Peter Pan himself, my dad. Deserves a proper grave.
Now the whole group was watching the crypt keeper dig his graves before pulling a big book from his mass of hair and studying one of its pages. Then the giant picked up a gold coffin with a handsome prince inside and heaved it into the empty plot. He moved down the line of waiting bodies, picked up a crystal coffin with a beautiful princess, and laid it beside the prince's coffin in the same grave.
Anastasia and Jacob died of starvation while on honeymoon. Avoidable deaths had they paid attention in class,
Yuba snapped. Grumbling, the students went back to mealworm hunting. But Sophie kept her eye on the crypt keeper, who studied his book again before picking up a coffinless ogre and plunking him in the next plot. Back to the book, and then he rested a resplendent queen's silver tomb beside a matching king's. Sophie's eyes drifted around the graveyard and saw the same pattern on every hill and valley. Evers buried together with twin headstones, boy and girl, man and wife, prince and princess, together in life and in death. Nevers buried all alone. Ever after, paradise together. Nevermore, paradise alone. Sophie froze. She knew the answer to the schoolmaster's riddle.
Perhaps we should search Necro Ridge,
Yuba sighed.
Come, students.
Cover for me, Sophie whispered to Dot. Dot swiveled. Where are you? Wait, where are... But Sophie was scampering through distant gravestones towards the flower ground entrance. Team, Dot sulked. A short while later, in the blue forest, 5 stimps looked up from their billy goat to see Sophie brandishing an egg.
Let's try this again, shall we?
It was there all along,
Agatha thought as she gazed at the walls. The weapon that made good invincible against evil. The thing a villain could never have, but a princess couldn't do without. The task that would send her and Sophie home. If Sophie is alive. Agatha felt another wave of powerless dread. She couldn't just sit here while Sophie was being tortured. Screams pealed outside. She spun to see Sophie hurled through her window by a bucking stimpf.
Love! Sophie panted. You're alive! Your hair!
Agatha gasped.
Love is what a villain can never have, but a heroine can't live without.
But what did they... Are you...
Am I right or not?
Agatha saw Sophie had no intention of talking about the Doom Room. Almost. She pointed to the paintings on the wall, with visions of heroes and heroines, lips pressed in climactic embrace.
True love's kiss, Sophie breathed.
If your true love kisses you, then you can't be a villain, Agatha said.
And if you can't find love, then you can't be a princess, said Sophie.
And we go home, Agatha swallowed. My half is taken care of. Yours isn't so simple.
Oh, please. I can make any one of those disgusting never boys fall in love with me. Just give me 5 minutes, an empty broom closet, and...
There's only one, Sophie, Agatha said, voice fraying. For every ever, there's only one true love. Sophie met her eyes. She collapsed onto the bed.
Tedros.
Agatha nodded sickly. The road home led through the one person who could ruin everything.
Tedros has to... kiss me, Sophie said, staring into space.
And he can't be tricked, forced, or duped into it. He has to mean it.
But how? He thinks I'm a villain. He hates me. Aggie, he's a king's son. He's beautiful. He's perfect. And look at me...
She grabbed her shorn hair and flaccid robes.
I'm...
Still a princess. Sophie looked at her. And the only way we'll get home, said Agatha, forcing a smile. So we have to make this kiss happen.
We,
said Sophie. We, rasped Agatha. Sophie hugged her tight.
We're going home, Aggie.
But in her arms, Agatha sensed something else. Something that told her the Doom Room had taken more from her friend than just her hair. Agatha squelched her doubts and clasped Sophie tighter. One kiss and it will all be over, she whispered. As they embraced in one tower, in another, the schoolmaster watched the Storian finish a magnificent painting of the two girls in each other's arms. The pen added a last flourish of words beneath it, closing the chapter. But no kiss comes without its price.
Chapter 15. Choose Your Coffin. Whenever Tedros was stressed, he worked out. So to see him sweating at 6 a.m. in the groom room, throwing hammers, pumping dumbbells, and swimming laps, meant he had a lot on his mind. It was understandable. The snowball invitations had been slipped under doors during the night. As he scaled climbing ropes made of braided blonde hair, he cursed the fact he would spend Christmas at a ball. Why did everything with Evers revolve around oppressive formal dances? The problem with balls was that boys had to do all the work. Girls could flirt and scheme and wish all they wanted, but in the end, it's the boy who had to make his choice and hope she said yes. Tedros wasn't worried about the girl saying yes. He was worried there was no girl he wanted to ask at all. He couldn't remember the last time he actually liked a girl. And yet, he always had one following him, claiming to be his girlfriend. It happened every time. He vowed to forget girls, then noticed one getting attention, set out to prove he could get her, got her, and discovered she was a fatuous prince hunter who had had her eye on him all along. The Beatrix curse. No. There was a better name for it. The Guinevere curse. Tedros was only 9 when his mother, Guinevere, made off with the knight Lancelot, leaving him and his father alone. He heard the whispers that followed. She found love. But what about all those times she said, "I love you," to his father? All the times she said it to him? Which love was real? Night after night, Tedros watched his father slip further into heartbreak and drunkenness. Death came within the year. With his last breaths, King Arthur gripped his son's hands.
"The people will need a queen, Tedros. Don't make my mistakes. Look for the girl who is truly good."
Tedros climbed higher and higher on the golden braids, veins straining against muscle. "Don't make my mistakes." His hand slipped, and he fell off the rope, crashing to a soft mat. Cheeks red, he glowered at the taunting waterfalls of hair. All the girls here were mistakes, Guinevere's who confused love with kisses. Daylight flecked across Agatha's pillow. She stirred and saw Sophie hunched on Rena's old bed. "Why are you still here? If the wolves catch you, it's the Doom Room again. Besides, you should be home writing that anonymous love poem to Tedra." "You didn't tell me there's a ball." Sophie held up a glittering snowflake invitation, Agatha's name in pearls. "Oh, who cares about a stupid ball?" Agatha groaned. "We'll be long gone. Now, make sure that poem talks about who he is as a person. His honour, his valour, his courage." Sophie was smelling the invitation now. "Sophie, listen to me. The closer we get to the ball, the more Tedros looks for a date. The more he looks for a date, the more he falls in love with someone else. The more he falls in love with someone else, the more he leaves us here to die. Got it?"
"But I want to be his date."
"You're not invited." Sophie pursed her lips. "Sophie, Tedros has to kiss you now. Otherwise we'll never get home."
"Honestly, do they even check invitations at a ball?"
Agatha snatched the invitation. "Stupid me, I thought you wanted to stay alive."
"But I can't miss the ball."
Agatha shoved her towards the door. "Use the tunnel of trees. Marble hall, glittering gowns, waltzing under stars. If a wolf catches you, just say you're lost.
A ball, Aggie. A real ball."
Agatha kicked her out. Sophie scowled back.
"My roommates will help me. They're true friends."
She slammed the door on Agatha's shocked expression. 10 minutes later, Hester stamped her foot, nearly killing Anadil's rat.
"Help! You want me to help a never kiss an ever? I'd rather stick my head up a horse's..."
"Sophie, no villain ever finds love,"
Anadil said, hoping reason might save her rats.
"To even look for it is to betray your own soul..."
"You want me to go home?" Sophie snapped, picking away tunnel leaves. "Then put a hex on Tedros so he asks me to the ball."
"The ball?" Hester screeched. "How do you even know about the ball?"
"A villain at a ball," said Dot.
"A villain waltzing," said Anadil.
"A villain curtsying," said Hester,
and all three collapsed into howls.
"I'm going to that ball," Sophie fumed.
"Presenting the Witch of Woods Beyond," Hester cackled through tears.
By lunch, she wasn't laughing. First, Sophie was 20 minutes late to class after trying to find a solution to her jagged hair. She disguised it with berets, bows, combs, before settling on a daisy wreath.
Not hideous, she sighed before she walked into uglification and saw students' hair turned grey from batwing potions.
A one suddenly exploded over her head.
Hideous, Professor Manley beamed, ogling her hair. Your greatest beauty, gone.
Sophie sobbed as she left class, but then heard Hester scream. In the hall, Albemarle, a studious, spectacled woodpecker, was chipping Sophie's name just below hers on the evil rankings board.
One little love spell, Hester, Sophie reminded sweetly, and then I'm gone forever.
Hester stomped away, reminding herself that never's kissing ever's couldn't be encouraged, no matter how extreme the circumstances. At the start of curses, Lady Lesso swept into the ice chamber, jaw tighter than usual.
Impossible to find good torturers these days, she muttered.
What is she talking about? Sophie whispered to Dot. Beast went missing, Dot whispered back.
Behind her, Sophie looked nauseous. Testing the class on Nemesis dreams, Lady Lesso seethed and sniped at every wrong answer.
But I thought a Nemesis dream meant you'll be a lead villain, Hester said. No, you imbecile! Only if you have symptoms. A Nemesis dream is nothing without symptoms, Lady Lesso retorted. Dot, what do you taste in your mouth during your first Nemesis dream?
What you ate before bed?
Blood, you idiot!
Lady Lesso dragged nails across the ice wall.
Oh, what I'd give to see a real villain in this school, a real villain, who could make good weep instead of these dung fleas.
When it came to her turn, Sophie expected the worst abuse. Only to have Lady Lesso give her a wart for a surely incorrect answer, and caress her shorn hair as she passed.
Why is she being nice to you? Hester hissed behind her.
Sophie had the same question, but turned around with a smile.
Because I'm future class captain, as long as I stay here, that is.
Hester looked like she might break Sophie's neck.
Love spells are junk villainy. They don't work.
I'm sure you'll find one that does, Sophie said.
I'm warning you, Sophie. This will end badly.
What about petunias in every room? Sophie mused. I think it'll be my first proposal as class captain.
That night, Hester wrote to her relatives for love spells.
It's contagious, Agatha moaned as Evergirls bounded around the clearing, showing each other their invitations, each snowflake a different shape. Nearby, Tedros shot marbles and ignored them entirely.
Every challenge had to do with ball beauty, ball etiquette, ball entrances, ball history.
Sophie wasn't listening. Pail of pig's feet in hand, she gazed longingly at the Evergirls.
No, Agatha said.
But what if he asks me?
Sophie, he needs to kiss you now, not take you to some stupid ball.
Oh, Agatha, don't you know your fairy tales? If he takes me to the ball, then he'll kiss me. Like Cinderella at midnight, kisses always happen at the ball. And by then, my hair will have grown and I'll have fixed my shoes and... Oh, no, the gown. Can you steal some charmeuse from one of the girls? Some crepe de chine, too, and tulle, mountains of tulle. Preferably in pink, but I can always dye it, though tulle never looks quite right dyed. Perhaps we should go with chiffon, then. Much more manageable.
Agatha blinked, speechless.
You're right. I should ask him first, Sophie said, leaping up. No frowns, darling. It'll be easy as pie. You'll see. Princess Sophie at a ball.
What are you... You'll ruin everything!
But Sophie had already flounced to the Evers' side, plopped next to Tedros, and held out her pail.
Hello, handsome. Want some of my... feet?
Tedros misfired his marble into Chadwick's eye. The entire clearing went silent. He turned to her. Your girlfriend's calling. Sophie followed his eyes to Agatha, waving her off.
She's just upset, Sophie sighed. You were right, Tedros. She and I are too close. That's why I left in the middle of class yesterday, to tell her it's time I make good friends now.
Dot said you left because you were sick. Sophie coughed.
Oh, well, I had a bit of a cold.
She said it was diarrhea. Sophie swallowed.
You know Dot, always making things up.
She doesn't seem like a liar to me.
She's always lying, just to get attention, since she's...
You know. Tedros raised his eyebrows. Since she's...
Fat.
I see. Tedros lined up his marble. Funny, isn't it? She crawled into empty graves to eat enough worms for the two of you, just so you wouldn't fail. Said you're her best friend.
Did she?
Sophie saw Dot waving at her.
How depressing.
She turned to Tedros, who was preparing to shoot.
Do you remember when we first met, Tedros? It was in the Blue Forest. Nothing that happened after matters. Not you punching me, or calling me a never, or you landing in poo. What matters is what you felt at first sight. You wanted to rescue me, Tedros. And here I am.
She folded her hands.
Whenever you're ready, then.
Tedros looked up at her. What?
To ask me to the ball,
Sophie said, smiling. The prince's face didn't change.
I know it's a bit early, but a girl does have to plan.
Sophie pressed. Beatrix shoved in.
No room for nevers.
What? There's plenty of room,
Sophie huffed. But Rena jostled her, then six other girls, and Sophie was pushed out of the circle entirely. She whirled to Tedros to defend her.
Can you go away? He said, eyes on his marble. You're blocking my view.
Agatha smirked as Sophie stomped towards her.
Easy as pie, hmm?
Sophie blew past her.
Humble pie,
Agatha shouted.
It's the hare,
Sophie sobbed. It's not the hare, Agatha said as they trudged through the Blue Forest gates. You need to make him like you first, otherwise we'll never get home.
It's supposed to be love at first sight. That's how fairy tales work.
Time for plan B.
Then again, he didn't say no, Sophie said hopefully. Perhaps it didn't go so badly.
Dot rushed up. Everyone's saying you called Tedros a liar, threw poo in his face, and licked his feet. Sophie turned to Agatha.
What's plan B?
They arrived with the rest of their forest group to find 8 glass coffins nestled in turquoise grass.
Each week, we'll repeat the challenge to discern good from evil, since it is the most crucial skill you will take into the woods,
Uber announced.
Today, we'll test the Evers. Given the fascination with yesterday's burials, I thought we'd give you a taste of your own.
With that, he made Evergirls and Nevergirls climb into the open coffins, and with a swish of his staff, turned all 8 into identical dark-haired princesses with big hips, round backsides, and trouty lips.
I'm obese,
Sophie gasped. Look, this is your chance, Agatha said, remembering Princess Uma's words. If Tedros is your greatest wish, he'll be pulled towards you. He'll know you're his true love.
But Beatrix will wish for him too.
You have to wish harder. Focus on what you love about him. Focus on what makes him yours. Yuba slammed the glass lids on both girls and jumbled the 8 coffins.
Now, study the maidens carefully and search for signs of good,
he said to the boys.
Once you're sure you've found an Ever, kiss her hand and her true nature will be revealed.
The Everboys warily ventured towards the coffins.
We want to play too.
Yuba turned to Hort and the Neverboys, chomping at the bit.
I suppose it'll give our girls incentive to behave, said the gnome.
Inside the coffins, 8 plump princesses stiffened as both good and evil boys wandered around them. Hort snuck to a blue mint bush, stepped over a snacking skunk, and tore off a few leaves. He saw Ruvan staring.
What? I like being fresh, said Hort, munching mint. Hurry up and make your choices,
Yuba barked. In her coffin, Agatha wished Tedros would look deep into Sophie's heart and see who she truly was. In her coffin, Sophie closed her eyes and thought of everything she loved about her prince. Tedros, meanwhile, didn't want any of these girls. But just as he was about to bag the challenge, he felt his eyes drawn to the 3rd coffin. Something pulled him towards its maiden, even though she looked just like all the rest. A warmth, a glow, a spark of energy pulsing between them. Yes, something was there. Something he hadn't noticed before. One of these girls was more than what she seemed.
Time's up,
Yuba said. Agatha heard a blood-curdling shriek and spun to Sophie, back in her body, lips scrunched against Hort's. Hort released her.
Oh, the hand. Oops.
He popped another mint leaf.
Should we start again?
You ape! Sophie kicked him, and he crashed into the mint bush, onto the snacking skunk, which raised its tail and sprayed him in the eyes. Hort staggered around, ramming into coffins.
I'm blind! I'm blind!
Until he smashed into Sophie's again, which slammed shut, sealing his skunked body in with hers. Aghast, Sophie rammed the glass, but it wouldn't budge.
Rule number 5. Nevers, don't trifle with love,
Yuba crabbed.
Fitting punishment. Now come, boys, let's see who you've picked.
Agatha heard her own coffin open. She turned and saw Tedros lift her thick hand towards his tender lips. Stunned, Agatha kneed him in the chest. Tedros fell back, bashed his head on the coffin top, and slumped to the ground. Everboys crowded around him, and princess clones jumped from their coffins to help, while Yuba conjured a block of ice for the prince's skull. In the chaos, Agatha slipped out of her coffin and into the one next to it. Tedros staggered up with no intention of letting his princess go. Yuba grimaced.
Perhaps you should sit down.
I want to finish. With a sigh, Yuba nodded at the clones, who climbed back into the coffins and closed their eyes. Tedros remembered it was the 3rd coffin. He lifted the jeweled glass over its maiden and kissed her hand with confidence. The princess melted into Beatrix, smiling imperiously. Tedros dropped her hand like a hot stone. In the next coffin, Agatha sighed with relief. The wolves howled in the distance. As the class followed Yuba back to school, Agatha stayed behind with Sophie.
Come, Agatha,
Yuba called.
This is Sophie's lesson to learn.
Agatha glanced back to see Sophie sealed in with Hort, holding her nose as she screamed and kicked the glass. Maybe the gnome was right. Tomorrow, her friend would be ready to listen. She'll survive, she muttered, following the others. It's only Hort. But Hort wasn't the problem. The problem was that Sophie had seen Agatha switch coffins. Chapter 16. Cupid Goes Rogue. Shielding herself from a morning storm, Agatha accosted Hester in the Nevers' lunch line. Where's Sophie?
Won't come out of the room, missed all our classes, Hester said as a wolf dumped mystery meat into her pail. Apparently sharing a coffin with Hort robs you of your will to live.
When Agatha made it to Puddled Halfway Bridge, her reflection was waiting for her, more glum and gaunt than the last time. I need to see Sophie, Agatha said, avoiding eye contact with herself.
That's the second time he's looked at you that way.
Huh? Second time who looked at me?
Tedros.
Well, Sophie won't listen to me.
Well, maybe Sophie isn't Tedros's true love then.
She has to be, Agatha said, suddenly worried. It can't be someone else. That's how we're getting back home. Who else could it be? Beatrix? Rena? Millie?
You.
Agatha looked up. Her reflection smiled hideously. Agatha's eyes veered back to her wet clumps.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. First off, love is something storybooks invented to keep girls busy. Second, I hate Tedros. Third, he thinks I'm an evil witch, which, given my recent behavior, might be true. Now, let me through.
Her reflection stopped smiling.
You think we're a witch?
Agatha glowered at herself.
We're making our friend win her true love just so that we can take her away from him.
Her reflection instantly turned uglier.
Definitely evil, it said, and vanished.
The door to room 66 was unlocked. Agatha found Sophie curled under her scorched, tattered covers.
I saw it, Sophie hissed. I saw him pick you. Here I'm worried about Beatrix when you're the double-crossing, backstabbing fink.
Look, I don't know why Tedros keeps choosing me, Agatha said, squeezing rain from her hair. Sophie's eyes drilled into her.
I want him to choose you, you fool, Agatha yelled. I want us to go home.
Sophie searched her face for a long moment. With a sigh, she turned to the window.
You don't know what it was like. I still smell him everywhere. He's in my nose, Agatha. They've given him his own room until the stench goes away. But who's to say where skunk ends and hort begins?
Shuddering, Sophie turned back.
I did everything you said, Aggie. I focused on all the things I love about Tedros. His skin, his eyes, his cheekbones.
Sophie, that's his looks.
Tedros won't feel a connection if you just like him because he's handsome. How is that different from every other girl?
Sophie frowned.
I didn't want to think about his crown or his fortune. That's shallow.
Think about who he is, his personality, his values, what he's like deep down.
Excuse me? I know how to make a boy love me, Sophie huffed, shooing her out. Just stop ruining things and let me do things my way.
Apparently Sophie's way was to humiliate herself as much as possible. During lunch the next day, she sidled up to Tedros in the Evers line, only to have his boys crowd her, chomping blue mint leaves. Then she tried to get the prince alone in Surviving Fairy Tales, but Beatrix stuck to him like glue, taking every opportunity to remind him he picked her coffin.
Tedros, can I talk to you? Sophie blurted finally.
Why would he talk to you? Beatrix said.
Because we're friends, you buzzing gnat.
Friends, Tedros flared. I've seen how you treat your friends. Use them, betray them, call them fat, call them liars. Appreciate the offer. I'll pass.
Attacking, betraying, lying. Sounds like one of our nevers is using her rules,
Yuba beamed. Sophie was so despondent she even ate